It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
McGonigal filling in for Boomer and Geo along with Willie Colon, and we're coming to you live from the Built for Tough studios right here at WFAN in New York City. 888-808-1019 if you want to call in, get into the baseball. Last night the Yankees got a reassuring win. A win that returned normality back to the Yankee season for even just a brief moment as they pounded the Minnesota Twins, hit four solo home runs. Giancarlo Stanton hit a blast. You got the game started with Bellinger, who went deep. Ben Rice, who has taken over the catcher position. And here, you know what? Let's even get to that. How much, like, this is just where it is with how toxic the Yankee fandoms have got, the Yankee fans have got with this team. I don't know if you saw this yesterday, but every day the New York Yankees will put out a tweet of their lineup. They tweet the lineup out, and they had Ben Rice. They list, you know, everybody in their position. So it's, you know, Grisham, center field, whatever. And they got to Ben Rice, and instead of C for catcher, they put D. It must have been a typo. Someone put D instead of C, which is, like, you know, right above and to the left on the thing. So it was, he was playing position D. And I got Marash, who, you know, was co-hosting the show with Evan in the afternoon today, screaming about it. I got a bunch of text messages about it. I got the entire social media Yankee fandom is up in arms about it. We can't even do social media, right? Like, everyone's furious. We're so uptight about this team. It drives me crazy. I understand that they've been bad this season. I understand they were seven games up, and now they are seven games back, practically. I understand they just got beat again by the Astros. I understand how ugly it has been for 2 months. But we talk about this team, like I said in the open, we talk about them like they're a last place franchise. We talk about them like they are the New York Jets. We talk about them like they've been run so poorly that it's time to break it all down to the studs, right? Because there's nothing else that could possibly work for them. And it just, I just wonder, because I asked you, because obviously you played in the NFL. Right, I understand that there are expectations, and baseball might be different with its money because there's a hard salary cap and the revenue sharing in the NFL. It's a little different, clearly. The Yankees have an advantage over many teams in Major League Baseball. But can I ask you what other team, let's just specifically go the NFL, what team in the NFL would have their fan base screaming that everyone connected to the organization has to be fired after going in the last 6 years to three conference championships, a Super Bowl, and in this season, they're the final wild card team in December. So three, let's do Jets. If in the eight-year tenure, the last six years of the last 8 years of Aaron Glenn, they've been to three AFC championships, a Super Bowl, and are currently sitting as the final wild card spot in the AFC playoff picture, would we be screaming that the Jets need to break down the entire organization to the studs, otherwise they can't function moving forward?
No.
Okay, thank you. That's all I'm saying. Like, that's what other sport in what other world with that level of success, and I know I'm a shill for saying it, what other level of success would be talked about in such a manner as if the organization is a bunch of floundering idiots?
No, I one, you're right. But two, I think that's what makes playing here difficult, right? Like, when you see Devin Williams have the collapse he's having, and from coming from the Brewers where we thought he was going to be, you know, the end-all be-all, so to speak, for him not even being pretty much a shell of himself, it speaks to a lot of what we're talking about, the expectation that every fan who's a diehard clamors to every little thing, even the D on a scorecard,
right?
You know, on a lineup card. So It makes for a tough culture. I don't know any other team that goes through this, right?
Yeah.
I don't know any other team in football that gets kind of scrutinized and ripped to shreds. Like, with the success they have, like, the Cowboys is the only team I think that has that type of compulsive fan. Like, they just hang on to everything the team does. The Cowboys haven't done anything.
They haven't been to an NFC championship game in 30 years.
Right. So the Yankees may be the only organization that fans are livid about everything that goes wrong with this team.
Right. Like, because there are coaches, like, I'm terrible with names sometimes, in Buffalo, McDermott.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, there are fans who are on him, right?
They've been on him for a while.
They've owned that Eastern Division. Like, to be fair, they've had a very high level of success without winning the championship. Correct. They haven't even been to a Super Bowl. But, you know, they've had a very high level of success. They've won divisions. You know, they've been unable to get over the Kansas City hump, right? But, and there are people who definitely want you know, McDermott gone, but I don't think the fan base there is screaming for, like, complete rebuild or just, like,
no.
take everything down to the studs. I think most, everyone who makes decisions are stupid.
Yeah, I would assume most Bills fans understand these are the glory days because of Josh Allen.
Right.
And the success they have had thus far,
mm-hmm.
even though getting, you know, stubbing their toe on the Chiefs. Even with their, you know, revamped roster, they still had success. Even some of the injuries, they, I mean, you're talking about Matt Milano.
Yeah.
You talk about Stephon Diggs leaving. You talk about Gabe Davis leaving, right? They've had multiple shuffles. James Cook is now a star in Buffalo. And so they've gone through a period of where things have looked different, but they have had continued success. With all that said, Buffalo still remembers, we're talking about wrestling, they still remember them days of losing them Super Bowls.
Sure.
And so they're like, we can't, like, it's never going to happen.
Right.
It doesn't matter what lineup or team, it's never going to happen for us.
Right.
But they stay afloat. So I think the Yankees, and I think also you are diehard.
Yeah.
I'm a fan. I'm not a diehard like you, but I'm a fan. I think it's obvious that Yankee fans are just built different, too.
Yeah, no, I and we should be, right? I'm not trying to diminish the idea of the championship or bust mentality. On some level, there is an expectation. And by again, I called for Brian Cashman's job 2 years ago and Aaron Boone's. Like, so they don't get to just not win forever. I get that. But the vitriol towards the organization for a team that went to the World Series last year, like, I don't – disappointment, frustration – like, I get it. Even calling for Boone's job, I've been close to it. That's how bad it's been this particular year.
Oh, I think I'm losing my mind. Yeah. I think another team that is it Steelers.
That's a good one, too.
I'm losing my mind.
Fans are fed up with how, you know, without a championship, as great as Mike Tomlin has been and as great as they've never, you know, sunk. Like, they've been steady, but they haven't won a playoff game in how long now?
Right. And every year there's a calling for Mike Tomlin's head. Every year there's a calling for something. And fans in Pittsburgh, I mean, you think Yankee Nation's a religion. Steeler Nation's a religion.
Yeah, like,
it's not even close.
Yeah.
I mean, the next team up will probably be the Steelers, honestly.
Yeah, I would think so. And that's why I'm puzzled by, like, and I wanted to talk about this, too, in a little bit. Like, you know, Cameron Hayward is holding in right now at camp, right? So, like, it's just, whether it's Micah Parsons in Dallas, whether it's Terry McLaurin in Washington, and obviously Hayward here with Pittsburgh. Like, Pittsburgh in particular, like, Washington just got to the NFC Championship game. They're trying to really make this next, like, to being a stable top of the NFC team.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they're arguing about $3 or $4 million with their star wide receiver, with their rookie quarterback. Like, this guy's an all pro in Pittsburgh last year. He's the, you know, the leader of the team in many ways. And they've made moves to go all in this year. They bring in Aaron Rodgers, right? They trade for Ramsey, like, and hopefully he's coming back from injury. Like, they've made
he looked good. I was in Steelers camp last week, to be honest.
Right.
Jalen Ramsey looks good. You know who also looks good?
Who?
Aaron Rodgers.
Does he?
Chris,
listen, you're talking to the guy.
Hey,
I spent a month of overnight spinning the wheel of quarterbacks,
Chris,
complaining about the Jets not bringing back Aaron Rodgers.
You know who else looks like, when I mean looks good, like, no look dimes. I'm talking about moving, like, scrambling, like looks like he can, like, I know he didn't lose any weight.
Yeah.
But he looks mobile. Looks like, I mean, he's not 2000 and
sure,
like, MVP mobile.
Yeah.
But for a guy his age, looks mobile. You wouldn't even thought he had any Achilles injury.
Really?
And so I was sitting there, and it was just like, as I'm standing there on the practice field, I'm saying to myself,
yeah.
Like, I'm not trying to curse on air,
no,
but I'm just
no.
like the Jets.
Yeah. No.
You know what I mean?
It's almost like it takes a full season before you can come back from
I
Achilles.
I tore my Achilles. It took
I mean,
me a
it's
full
weird
year.
How that works.
I tore my Achilles. It took me a full year to get back to me being myself on the football.
Yeah, I think that, and that's why I'm frustrated by what they're doing. Look, I'm not in the, I don't know what he's asking for. I don't know all the details, but they went and get Aaron Rodgers. They make moves like Ramsey. It feels like they've been fed up with the same old, same old. They're trying to be bold inside a division that's very difficult, obviously, with some great quarterback play. Like, I think they're as fascinating a team, and I'm frustrated they would not just make sure they have their best team and pay this guy. But, like, to your point about Aaron Rodgers, like, that's why, like, for me, with Aaron Glenn here, I understand culture is difficult, but if you're gonna be the culture guy, then bring in guys that make culture difficult and fix the culture and have a quarterback who you can't tell me Justin Fields is better. Can he stay healthier? Okay. Can he do different things in the running game and be a different type of quarterback? Okay. And maybe that's what you're looking for. But Now you just sent me off on a whole other tangent with Aaron Rodgers.
No, I'm being honest. I'm just telling you what I've seen. But, I mean, I'm just telling you what I was.
Can you imagine if he comes in week one and lights up the Jets and takes Pittsburgh to the top of that division along with Baltimore and Cincinnati? I mean, that would be. You want to talk about the Jets in absolute misery? That is misery.
I'm not saying it's impossible. I'll just tell you as of right now. The man looks good. I'm just being honest.
And we should have had this conversation before the show started.
And I'm glad I'm not the only one that feels that way. I think Ryan Clark was in camp.
Yeah.
He reported the same thing. Like multiple reporters, like the guy, you know. I know Jets fans can't wait to boo the paint off his helmet.
Sure, week one.
Get that. But you're not going to see what we saw last year.
You feel really confident in that.
I'm just telling you what I saw. Now, you know, whatever happens, happens. But, I mean, the man looks...
Well, he's got to stay healthy. We all understand that. And last year, it wasn't even just a major injury. He had problems playing through any sort of... anything that was hampering him cost him significant play on the field. You saw it.
Man that was dealing with four injuries, I mean, between the Achilles, the knee, the hip, and the ankle.
Right.
Like, those are all things he was dealing with.
Yeah.
Still trying to keep this team afloat.
Yeah.
And Valley, it was a circus, right? A lot of things happened.
Of course.
Well, everything's well documented. But I think having the fact, being now that he's healthy,
mm-hmm.
and he's with a ball club where he doesn't have to be the coach, where, you know...
Yeah.
It speaks to a lot of when you step into the organization and you're not there to reset a culture. You're just simply there to play quarterback.
Yeah.
And he's in Pittsburgh simply to play quarterback.
Yeah.
Because everything's set in place.
Yeah.
Coach, front office, the people around the building, how they go about their business is already like, no, it's a machine.
Yeah.
So now he just can just play quarterback and not be asked to, you know, there's a young quarterback in that room by the name of Will Howard who's at Ohio State.
Sure.
He's not asked to mentor Will Howard. He's wanting to do that. He wants to pass on that oral history. But overall, man, you could tell he's just in a different place.
Yeah. No, I think that's such a good point because when he came here, it wasn't even, you're right, it wasn't just to play quarterback. It was to lift the New York Jets organization.
We would treat him like Gandalf. We were treating Aaron Rodgers like Gandalf, like man, save us.
You are just hitting it. You're wrestling. You're Lord of the Rings. I'm a huge Lord of the Rings guy, man. We should go do ayahuasca together. Like, this is amazing. But yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. He came here like that, and it felt like. And I don't want to I guess we're doing it when he ran out of that tunnel on 9/11 with the American flag.
One of the most iconic times in New York history.
There's no doubt. Like, it gave me, and I'm not a Jets fan, but it gave me goosebumps, man. That was an amazing moment. And to have it, you know, four plays into it end, but, like, that's what it was. He was running out of the tunnel to carry the Jets.
Jets fans were going nuts. They were throwing gabagool in the air. They were ripping over the Jets jackets. Gandolfini was popping up on the screen.
Yeah.
I mean, we were just like in Jet heaven when that man ran out that tunnel.
I know.
Four plays in, it felt like somebody pulled the extension cord out of all of New York City.
Brutal. And if 2 years later he does that for you can't even say floundering Pittsburgh team, but a team that's kind of, you know, gotten a bit of a rut here.
They've been deficient at the quarterback position ever since Ben Roethlisberger.
Absolutely. If he fully recovers from that injury and does what he was supposed to do for the Jets for Pittsburgh and starts that campaign against the Jets, I mean, it's hard not to feel like a team is cursed. Forget everything I said in the open. It's hard not to feel like a team is cursed.
Same old Jets.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, That is tough. That is tough. But you're right. He was brought here to do more than just play quarterback. And now he can go there with Mike Tomlin and that Pittsburgh team. And it feels like they're going for it. Like, it feels like they're, for the first time, they're not steady. We'll be fine. Our culture and our coach and just how we play football in Pittsburgh will carry us to some level of success. It's like, let's make moves to see if we can go win something here.
Well, I think it's two things. I think one, if you look at the back half of that season,
mm-hmm.
Those five games where they played the big dogs in the NFL, meaning the Ravens, the Chiefs, and the Eagles, and then they crawled into the playoffs against Baltimore and got dog walked. They realized they didn't have enough, and they were deficient mostly at that position.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what killed Russell Wilson. He, you know, their best guy beat the hell out of our guy. And Russell was, you know, the resume and everything that comes along with him couldn't keep up with the Joe Burrows or the Patrick Mahomes or the Jalen Hurts of the world. So they realized they had to make a change. On top of that, they needed more firepower.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
we got their slop, and they got Aaron Rodgers.
Well,
that sounds... It's fantastic.
I don't want to put it like that. I mean,
we got the guys who couldn't do it, and now Aaron Rodgers looks as good as he's looked since his MVP season, not me, Willie Colon, and they're about to go on a run here.
This is practice. I'm just talking about how he looked in practice. He looked damn good in practice.
I'm sure he did. That is going to be something to watch, man. That is. We talked yesterday about Shedeur Sanders and Jackson Dart and kind of them being like the
always
New York
tied
Jets, all kind of tied to each other. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I mean, but it feels like that. For the New York Giants but Aaron Rodgers and connected to the Jets.
And quickly, before I know we got to push along, if you're a Jets fan, you still have to be optimistic with what you saw Saturday.
Right.
I mean,
absolutely.
A really good offensive line, a really good young offensive line. We have a run game. I think Breland Allen is maybe the lead horse right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's documented, but I think out of the three running backs, he's played the best.
Yeah.
He played the best Saturday. And you have a defense that looks strong. I thought Sauce looked good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think there's a lot of optimism. There's
absolutely
a lot of high notes. It's just a matter of how long can they make
it.
No, listen,
I feel that optimism. I do. I feel it for both football teams on a fairly high level. I don't know what optimism.
Let's go to the break.
I don't know what optimism for the New York Giants is, but I do feel it. But yeah, Aaron Rodgers dominating in Pittsburgh would be something else.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, 7:29. Chris McMonagle and Willie Colon.
Rocking and rolling.
Rocking and rolling.
Yeah.
Waiting for CeeLo. Here he is.
Hi.
CeeLo, I was looking at your shirt, and since we're talking about all these young kids, I wonder if anybody, all the young kids, would recognize what you're saying on your shirt.
No chance.
You think the young kids would never get it?
Mine would, because I made them watch the movie.
Yes,
but
mine would as well.
Your kid?
Yeah, they watch the Sandlot.
So you guys are the dads that make sure your kids watch the classics.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
correct.
Good.
Yes. I mean,
that might be part of why, you know, they're saying the things they say, because, you know, Happy Gilmore 2 a little bit.
My boys last night, can I watch this? I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Well, all my friends did. I'm like, I'm not their parents. Sorry.
What did they want to watch?
The new Happy Gilmore.
Why is it a little?
Some words here or there.
They're 9 and 6, you know, like I'm noticing the young kids, the language has gotten worse and worse. So I don't want my kids to
curse around your kids.
I do not. No,
you don't. You're a good parent.
And that's not, I'm not trying to say I'm, you know, some holier than thou person. To me, that's just, it blows my mind in current day that I'll be around an adult with kids near, and there's just no filter.
Yeah.
And I don't criticize them for it, because they're grown adults, and who am I to tell them how to act?
But you pull your kids out of...
I mean, sometimes you can. It just happens, you know. Yeah. It's like, you know, earmuff situation. But, I mean, it's just like, to me, common decency. But, hey.
Well, it goes back to when you were talking about the game the other day. You said a bunch of kids and the 20-year-olds were just kind of going nuts, right?
Yeah, well, that was really,
I understand that. You're at a pro game. They paid for their tickets. They're drinking alcohol. I'm talking like local youth football and other parents, like just filter, just F this, F that. I'm like,
I know.
Come on now. It's not necessary.
Yeah, I've tried my best not to be that parent.
Yeah, I try to, but it happens. But all right, when Chris gets off his soapbox, we can start the episode.
All right, off the soapbox.
Measly parents.
Sponsored by Primo
Soap
Brands.
For everybody.
The official water sponsor of MLB, Major League Baseball, trademarks used with permission. Also brought to you by Flag and Anthem, real clothes for real life. No disrespect to Adam Warren. He pitched a nice ball game last night, but the Yankee bats have been cold, so we celebrate the long ball with our thriving player of the game, brought to you by ThriveWell Infusion.
Big G with a base hit the left first time, and he drives one deep right center field. Got an old Kansas carry. Buxton looking up, and it's gone into the Yankee bullpen. Dead Carlos Stanton staying hot, his 11th home run.
That's Dave Sims here on The Fan. One of four solo homers on the night as part of a 6-2 win over the Twins. Stanton 2-for-4 with his homer. He's up to a .281 batting average, a .910 OPS. It was also his first home run as an outfielder in 2 years. He's been hanging in there in right field for now.
In all seriousness, this might be the best stretch, elongated stretch of Stanton in a Yankee uniform since maybe the 2018 when he first got here. Like, that's a two
regular season, obviously.
Yeah, regular season. No, obviously in the postseason he goes off. But yeah, for a regular season stretch, with as limited of the terrible at bats, where you're just like, what the hell is he swinging at? It took about 2 weeks when he first came back. But since that home run he hit in that game in Toronto that helped them get back, and after being down 7-0 and then 9-7 or whatever, like, since that moment, this has probably been as good a stretch we've seen Stanton in a Yankee uniform.
He's been very good.
Been very good.
He is our thriving Yankees, thriving player of the game, brought to you by ThriveWell, New York's premier infusion and injection center, saving lives drip by drip. Visit ThriveWellInfusion.com. We also saw him go first to third on a base hit.
How about that?
In this ball game. He's pretty much the opposite of Willie Mays Hayes in the eyes of Lou Brown from Major League.
Well, you may run like Mays, but you hit like shit.
So he actually can hit, but he runs like bleep, as our guy Marco Belletti, update man extraordinaire, put it on Twitter X last night. Good thing he can hit, because he moves like a guy running on ice while trying to hold in explosive diarrhea, which I thought summed it up pretty accurately when you watch the accompanying
video.
Very
descriptive.
And, and I'll tell you the truth, I got nervous last night, because the worst, like, it's one thing just to run out a double in the gap. But he made a decision. He was coasting into
second.
Then he saw the bobble and then decided to pick it up. And that's where we are with him. We're at him where if he has to make that moment of, like, I'm just jogging. Oh, you know what? Let me get into gear and whatever his gear is. That scares the hell out of me.
Sure.
You because that's breath. How he that's how it's he like pulls. He constantly. Yeah. Like, I think he's way faster than this. I think if he was running for his life or whatever, like, he could run a hell of a lot faster.
Have you ever seen
he's
Stan
purposely,
in person?
No.
He's a
I mean, I've seen him, you know, from good seats, but never like.
But I'm saying I can see why he has some of the tightness. Like, he's
no doubt.
He's like stiff, like a rock. Like, he's a juggernaut.
Yeah, and he's purposely running like this to make sure he doesn't get injured. So, like,
that's fine. They need the bat.
Absolutely.
You know? Back to Warren.
Bear crawl, for all I care.
He delivered one of his best starts of the season. He was a strike away from finishing seven innings before allowing a second solo homer, but it ends up 6 2/3 of two run ball, seven strikeouts to improve to 7-5 for Aaron Boone.
Filled up the strike zone. You know, no walks. Let's start with that. But, I mean, you saw swing and miss with the heater. I thought the sweeper was good. He was on the attack.
85 pitches, 60 strikes, and Warren was happy to be the recipient of some early offense. It was a crisp, clean, much-needed win all the way around.
I know. We got a spark of energy, and it was, all right, this is how we're supposed to play baseball. Like, the past month hadn't been how we're supposed to play baseball, and we've had a gut punch lately, and, you know, it was nice to get out there and play baseball the way we're supposed to.
Twins always help see them, seem to help them do that.
That is true.
That's just the way it is.
It's always good to see the Twins. There's no doubt.
Middle game of the series tonight.
Good to see the Twins.
Carlos Rodon for the Yanks. It's a bullpen game, at least planned, for Minnesota. Pre-game coverage 6:25 here on The Fan and the free Odyssey app. Now, there's been lots of Aaron Boone chatter again in recent weeks with the Yankees struggling. Obviously, Chris Russo chiming in as guest of Joel Sherman and John Heyman on their podcast.
Rank Boone as the manager. He's not better than Cora. He's not better than Bochy. He's not better than Francona. He's not better than Dave Roberts. He's not better than Torre Lovello. He's not better than A.J. Hinch. He's probably not better than Council, although postseason's been spotty, but he's probably not better than Council. How do the Yankees have a manager who's the eighth best? Now, you guys might think he's higher than I, but I think there's eight managers in the sport better than freaking Boone.
Freaking Boone.
Oh, my God. I love Dog. And
we all do.
I don't think he's better than this one and better than that one, but, like, come on. Terry Lovello, what has he done? He went to a World Series. Okay, same as Boone. What has Council done? Council got a big contract.
Yes.
He's failed miserably in Milwaukee in the postseason.
He did know the postseason failures. Yeah.
Well, that's just a minor obstacle
footnote
in way of getting in front of the line in front of Aaron Boone. That's all.
All right, now one guy in particular before you continue, because he felt the Yankees could have pivoted to this gentleman this past winter.
Francona gets a job again. You're telling me that Boone is a better manager than Terry Francona? Are you freaking crazy? How did Francona end up with the Reds? Did the Yankees put a call in? See if Francona. Hey, Terry, we had a bad World Series. Our manager killed us in game one. He killed him in game one, guys. That was awful. And Francona ends up in Cincinnati. Everybody loves Boone, and he's not a bad manager, but he's been here a long time with one World Series win, and is, in my opinion, seven or eight managers in a sport better than he is.
Obviously meant World Series appearance, just to clear that up.
Yes.
But, I mean,
I don't think anyone would disagree that Terry Francona is not a better manager.
Right.
Terry Francona is one of the great managers in baseball.
Yes.
There's no doubt. Same thing with Bruce Bochy. I think we'd all, you know, be willing to admit that Bruce Bochy is a better manager than Aaron Boone.
And that but goes back to where the organization is at and the type of guy they want to work with.
Right. So the point is, the Yankees should have the best manager in baseball. Otherwise, what the hell are we doing? Right.
According to Dahl.
And I would think most Yankee fans would be laughing the other way, going, eight, I can give you 25 that are better than Aaron Boone. I have no doubt. But just to hear him rank, you know, the managers in baseball. And, yeah, I don't know if Terry Francona wanted the Yankee job. I don't know if he wants that kind of pressure.
That's very fair.
I think he's more than happy to go to Cincinnati and, you know, live out his days getting a young upstart team to play.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Because I think some managers, like, man, I just don't need it. Like, Boone wakes up.
He's won championships.
He's had health issues that obviously knocked him out at times. So, little less less pressure and stress in Cincinnati, I'd imagine.
Right.
Did you know Boone wakes up and is like, better, you know, I got to get this team on the right track, but at the same time, I got to deal with the media and everything that comes along with it. Like, he has to win the press conference every night and get ridiculed for not winning it every night.
Pretty much, yeah. There's very few instances where people are like, oh, he really killed it there in the press conference, especially when they're losing. That's just the way it goes. Mets are back to work tonight. All of a sudden, Carlos Mendoza has been taking some heat for the things he's had to say after some of these losses. The Mets will try to put an end to a seven-game skid when they host the Braves in the first of three at Citi Field. Clay Holmes, Spencer Strider, the starters for a 7:10 first pitch on Odyssey Mets Radio. Phillies did beat the Reds last night 4-1, so they are six up on the Mets. The Mets now two games clear of Cincinnati for that third and final wild card berth in the National League. And the Brewers made it 10 straight wins, 7-1 atop the Pirates. They got to deal with Paul Skenes tonight, but then again, the Pirates don't really score runs for him, so that could mean another win for Milwaukee. Jets and Giants have their first of two joint practices today in Florham Park. Tomorrow they'll be in East Rutherford before their annual preseason game this Saturday. Impressive honesty and self-awareness from Justin Fields following Saturday night's game against the Packers, as Brian Costello of the New York Post mentioned some glowing compliments from one Aaron Glenn.
You a few times on your maturity and kind of your ability to shut out the noise, the outside noise. Quarterbacks are always going to hear it. Yeah. Have you always been good at that?
No, I have not.
No hesitation, and obviously a guy who went through it and some tough times in Chicago, and what he got to deal with last year in Pittsburgh, giving way to Russell Wilson, all part of evolving as a quarterback and a professional.
I've learned over the years that, you know, no matter what you do, everybody's going to have an opinion on you, so... And opinions don't matter, whether they're good or bad. You know, you just have to take a reality check sometimes. And, you know, the only people's opinion that matters to me is the guys in the building.
So good mindset for him and good He's opportunity been a lot, for him man. This year, obviously. Yeah.
He's been through a lot, especially going through what he went through in Chicago, Atlanta, and Pittsburgh. Having a 4-2 record and still getting the ball pulled from him. It's like, it's not easy.
That is not easy, no.
Speaking of criticism and blocking out the noise and having the right mentality, it took Geno Smith a while to figure that out. We talked about it last week. Tough time here in New York, but a career that's come full circle all these years later. Now with the Raiders, they played their preseason opener in Seattle last week, so it was a quick return there for both him and Pete Carroll, new Raiders head coach. So I don't know if you guys caught this. There was a fan in the stands who had a sign that read, who was the bigger bust, Geno or Jamarcus Russell? To which Geno flipped the guy the double bird. So here was Pete Carroll when asked about that after the fact.
Geno Smith was seen at the Seahawks game making an obscene gesture, like at a fan with a sign.
Did you see what the sign said?
Yeah, I saw it.
Next question.
Yeah, so there's... Back in this
That's the way to have your guys back.
That's the way you have your guys back. Yeah. Absolutely. That should have been the answer.
I saw a still image. It looked like... maybe I have this wrong. I think it's Carroll passed the same sign. I think tried to like... Reach up and take it from the guy?
I'm surprised they let him pause that much. Because it also is patently ridiculous.
Right.
Like, it's not even a real... It's just stupidity.
Yeah.
It's just trying to get under the skin, and it obviously worked.
Yes.
I mean, Jamarcus Russell is one of the biggest busts in NFL history.
I mean...
He just signed a contract to go play for the Raiders.
Yes.
Like, it's not even close.
And mind you, has numbers in Seattle.
Oh, of course. Like, no, it had a good run. Took him to the postseason. Had a really good run.
I mean, after he left New York, people thought we would never see Geno Smith again. Yeah. Landing in Seattle, it made him a competitive outfit.
Yeah.
So I think, to your point, put some respect on his
name. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The only thing that we all, at least in this town, the Geno Smith thing is that he played instead of Eli Manning. That was the moment that was just like...
Right. Which wasn't his fault.
No, which wasn't his fault, which was Brian. Yeah, which was,
I think we also remember the sucker punch.
Yeah,
that's what I was alluding to.
We discussed about that. Last week, and Monday was the 10-year anniversary.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I guess I still think the breaking of Eli Manning's streak is a bigger deal than
it was more recent than that. But
yeah,
that was a big deal at the time
because
he was, you know, primed to lead that offense with Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker. And
Fitzpatrick
ended up having a big offensive year until Week 17 in Buffalo. Mm-hmm.
Was that Shermer or McAdoo?
It was Shermer. That was McAdoo.
That was McAdoo.
Yeah. I'll never forget that day.
I forgot about McAdoo.
I'll never forget that day.
Everyone did.
He was given the normal post-practice like scrum, like, and he started with the injuries. Like, so it was just like, so on this we have a hamstring, he has an ankle, and Geno Smith will start on Saturday. What?
Wasn't McAdoo's thing? He always wore khaki pants that were like too big and that iron.
Well,
his introductory press conference.
Yeah.
It looked like he basically bought it off the rack, you know, at Marshall's or something.
And I always talk about this too, because I was with Mike Francesa. I used to produce and run the board for Mike Francesa. And I went to camp that next year. The first year McAdoo takes over, 16, they win 11 games, they go to the playoffs. pretty much on the backs of their defense.
Yeah.
They have the boat trip. They lose that game in Green Bay. They're out there running with no shirts on before the game, the whole bit. The next year, they sign Brandon Marshall. They expect to have this big year. And I remember going to camp, and he had, like, the big doofy oversuits and the kind of, like, bowl haircut and everything. And then he shows up to camp, and it is slicked back like Pat Riley. And he's wearing the glasses.
It was Gordon Bombay in Mighty Ducks, too.
Yes, he was Gordon Bombay in Mighty Ducks, too. There's no doubt. He was feeling himself. And I remember thinking, wow, this could feel... He practically put his feet up on the desk to talk to Mike. Like, it was just like, they're here. They have arrived. The Giants thought they were going to be so good that year. That feeling around camp, they were expecting one more Super Bowl run from Eli Manning. And they fell on their face immediately. Yeah. They went 0-4 and could not stop the slide to save their lives. And then really culminated with taking Eli Manning out. And then the team just gave up.
Benny with the good hair.
He showed up to that camp. I'll never forget it. I was like,
is there a picture of that?
No, he got crushed in the initial opening press conference for looking like, you know,
like this a schlub.
But then it was a guy that lived in the team issued attire. You know, you get him in the quarter zip and the shorts.
He said
and
he hadn't worn a suit in years because he's a football coach and he had lost like 40 pounds in the subsequent years.
So why not
just
throw that?
There was the four. I mean, Dave was similar. Remember the Dave when he gets out of the blue pickup truck in the snow and walks in with the suit and the briefcase and that like staged video.
They
did because of the way it was presented on social media.
Yeah,
but
of course.
He doesn't exactly, you know, dress up nice in a suit either. And I'm not knocking the guy.
No.
You know?
But at least he started with like this. I'm a blue collar coach.
Yes.
Coming to coach a blue collar team in a blue collar city.
Very true. So,
so he tried to give you guys Patrick Mahomes too.
I know McAdoo did. That's a famous story that he was in that year of the draft. He was pounding the table to get to trade up and get Patrick Mahomes. And they didn't do it.
never heard from again.
So he wasn't a great coach, but maybe a talent evaluator.
The way Sula looked at me like,
that would have been.
Sometimes it sucks to suck, bro.
Yeah. But let's be totally honest. He still would be good. But he wouldn't be Patrick Mahomes with the Giants.
Correct.
No, he wouldn't be Patrick Mahomes with the Giants. He'd be,
but he'll be way better than what we've seen the last.
I think he'd probably still be the starter of the New York Giants, but he wouldn't be the greatest quarterback in the NFL.
Just like all the Jet fans who clamored for Trevor Lawrence, who's been mid, to quote Jackson Dart down in Jacksonville.
Yep.
I'm sorry, it would have been a train wreck here in New York. Very successful.
Josh Allen would have been a train wreck here, and he might be the most gifted quarterback ever.
Yeah. Very good point.
Yeah, people don't realize how we talk about development. They developed, like, year three. I mean, it took 3 years for him to kind of, like, shave him down, get his game together, and kind of build an offense around his skill set. It wasn't like he was hot out there. I mean, he was a wild cowboy for the first 2 years. Third year, he was like, okay, this is how I got to play the position. So.
And who developed him?
Brian Daboll.
Brian Daboll. That's right. Let's go, Brian Daboll. Let's go. We got another quarterback to develop, baby. I'm pumped about it.
See what happens.
That's all we can do, but I'm excited.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right. Not today. Today it's Chris McMonagle and Willie Colon filling in for the guys. 7:52 on this Tuesday morning. Let's take a couple calls here. We haven't taken calls all morning long. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Giovanni in Long Island. What's up, Giovanni?
How you doing, guys? First time caller, long time listener. I just want to say my piece about Aaron Boone, if that's okay with you guys. I got two little things to say. So the first thing is, I think Aaron Boone gets a bad rap as a manager because the Yankees, as we all know, they buy their teams and stuff like that. He's only given the opportunity to work with what they bought for him. Now, if he was out to go out and scout his own players and do that, which I think he's very capable of doing, I think it would be a very different team and a very different management style. Because we all have a boss to answer to at the end of the day.
Go ahead. I'll let you finish your point. We'll get to the first point then.
And then the second thing that I wanted to mention is that everybody keeps talking about like our bullpen, and that like we need to shore up our bullpen and stuff like that. I think they went out and made moves to try to move that in the right direction. But now with Aaron Judge's injury in the past couple weeks now, I'm still a bit iffy if he's even should be DHing.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's more of a serious problem.
Yeah, no, definitely. You need Judge to be Judge. Otherwise, the Yankees aren't going to be the Yankees. That's pretty obvious. So, managers don't go out and scout the team. I mean, he is given the team. And there's been a lot of people talking. Like Clint Frazier, a former prospect and left fielder for the New York Yankees, kind of went on his new podcast, I guess, and talked about the idea. And we've known it for a while. The Yankees analytic team comes up with a lineup. Aaron Boone comes up with a lineup. On a daily basis, they talk about the lineup. The lineup isn't now. Aaron Boone, I think, probably has, I don't know, veto power or whatever. Aaron Boone can do whatever he wants. But I do think that there is a conversation that they all talk about it. And Aaron Boone, listen, it is your boss. It is the team. If they feel really strongly about it and you're like, well, is it that, you know, then you kind of just go with it. I think that probably happens. But Aaron Boone dictates what happens. Aaron Boone doesn't have a monitor in his ear to talk to which pitcher to go to in the sixth or seventh. But they do come up with plans. Like, yeah, they go over
everything.
They allow
him to do the job.
They allow him to do the job, but they do, like Clint Frazier said that, you know, when they get the lineup and if he goes against script and it doesn't go well, like someone's there to say, well, why didn't you do what we suggested? Mm. Like where if he sticks on brand, if things don't go well, well, listen, hey, it didn't work out today. Like where he'll be held accountable by management if he goes off script, which I don't know. Maybe that's true. And clearly, like, they go in with a plan. I think that's true. And I think sometimes the biggest problem with Aaron Boone and the Yankees is that they never see that, like, the game can dictate a need for a changing of the plan. Like, they'll go in with it, for an example, not to get too into the weeds with baseball, but, like, if we're in the seventh inning and we're up or down by this many runs and it's this part of the order coming up, this is the guy we're going to. Like, that, they know that going in.
Right.
It doesn't mean that Boone is told to do that, but that's the plan the collective Yankees have come up with. Now, if that plan includes Devin Williams, because you're not taking into account the fact that he's broken and all you're looking at is his numbers and how that part of the lineup hits changeups, like, I think that's a faulty thought process. And at some point, you have to be able to get off script and say, I don't care that the numbers tell me that he should be facing this person, because I recognize, I've watched the game, I've seen him pitch, and I don't trust him to get anybody out, no matter what the numbers tell me. So I do think that there's fair criticism, but the idea that he's a puppet goes too far for me.
Yeah, but I also think, to your point, in that scenario you painted, what keeps Aaron Boone as the manager is the fact that he does stay on script.
Yeah, I think that's part of it.
You know what I mean? That they feel like they don't have a guy that goes rogue that they can't answer to.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, he's, and then, like, for instance, like, Roger Goodell takes a lot of hits because of what the owners tell him to do, mm-hmm. right? But he's the face of it. Kind of like how Aaron Boone takes a lot of hits because he's the face of the Yankees.
Absolutely.
So he knows that behind the curtain, they're probably patting him on the back, but he's going to be the one taking the arrows.
Right.
So that's just the way it is. So I like Aaron Boone. I liked him as a player. Yeah. I like him now. I think, you know, it's unfortunate. You go to a war series, you don't deliver, and some of that is your fault.
Sure.
And you have to go into the next year, and your team is in this state.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, who else do we look to?
Yeah.
And he's the guy.
No, absolutely. So. And again, I'm less on Aaron Boone's case for things like that. I do think that's part of it. I also, like, we talked about this yesterday. I'm less on his case for mental errors. I'm less on his case for that. To me, it's about just simple achieving, overachieving, underachieving, as that's on the manager, plain and simple. And I think they're dramatically underachieving. And then just the vibe of the team. And I feel like this team, when they get punched in the face, they sulk.
Yeah, but
their heads go
down.
Like, that's the manager has to find a way to make his team more assertive in the moments where they're.
We also got to be fair, and we're both Yankees fans. Like, we sat here yesterday and talked about how Soto, Lindor, and Alonso need to be better, and they need to be held accountable.
Yes.
Right? We have to do the same thing for our players too. It can't always be on Aaron not being able to deliver in the most crucial situations, or having blind faith to a Devin Williams. Like, at some point, like, the fact that Cody Bellinger's, you know, what, he hit his final home run in, like, the last, what, 12 games?
Well, he went into a little mini slump, but
right.
But yes.
Or, Jazz has been
terrible.
You know what I mean? So there's so many guys we don't call to the front of the congregation, but it's not the same thing for the Mets, right? We're always looking for the guys to be like, hey, we hold those guys accountable, but our stars.
I think that's totally fair. And as much, you know, I've been a proponent of Judge eventually will find his way in the postseason, because great players eventually play great. But you could talk about any individual move from Aaron Boone in the World Series. Was that the reason they lost? Or was it that Judge was striking out every other at bat? And I mean, that's just the plain truth of it. And people, you know, like, will say, oh, what a shame this disastrous franchise can't put a team together that can have Aaron Judge win a championship. You're going to waste Aaron Judge's prime. Aaron Judge was in his prime last year in the World Series,
mm-hmm.
and he did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He did nothing. So he's got to be part of them winning. Otherwise, it's not going to work.